Good morning, people. This is the first session of today, so there will be a lot of people still walking in the room, probably 15 after we started, so that's fine. But we need to get started because we have a lot of demos, a lot of code, a lot of stuff what we actually want to show within the session. We'll start with an introductions, and obviously this was the site provisioning techniques with SharePoint apps. So we kind of concentrate on how we can create sites and subsites in the cloud or in on-prem using the SharePoint app techniques. The cloud application model or within the on-prem, this work as well. So don't get fooled, by the way, on the fact that if we use the term cloud application model, it can be a private cloud as well. So it definitely works in the on-prem, and what we're going to show today is fully functional in the on-prem as well. And let's start with an introduction. So, Bert?
So, I'm Bert Jensen. I'm a consultant in MCS, Microsoft Consulting Services. I'm not going to tell in which country yet, because you might wonder, why are there French fries on a slide, 9 a.m. in the morning? You might be hungry, but you probably do not want to eat French fries right now. I don't know. So, can someone think about a reason why French fries relates to my country? Anyone an idea? Belgium, right. So, I'm from Belgium, and I'm doing over there SharePoint online deployments. So, that's kind of my main job, helping customers move to SharePoint online, bring them to the cloud. Vesa?
Good. And my name is Vesa Juvonen. I'm a principal consultant for Microsoft Consulting Services, and my base location is Finland. And that's the reason why we are, well, my presentation language is then Finglish today. Hopefully you'll get, anyway, the message what we're going to go through, and we're going to show a lot of the demos. So the demos and the code will be in English. So if you can't understand what I'm saying or what Bert is saying, you can hopefully see the stuff from the slides anyway. I used to be I'm a SharePoint architect, SharePoint consultant. I've done the Ignite programs. I used to be an instructor or content owner or speaker in the MCM training, all 18 rotations, which was fun. And during those rotations, I was always responsible of the full trust code stuff. So essentially, I've been teaching people how to do site definitions, web templates, feature framework stuff, ALM for customizations. Now, suddenly, the whole thing is turning upside down, which is kind of interesting. But I'm a really good proof of the fact that you are able to move on the other side, on this interesting new side of the SharePoint development as well. Anyway, that's about me. If you have any questions, you can always send us an email afterwards as well. So feel free to contact us and use our blogs for the additional information. Let's get started on content. This is the final day, so we're not going to actually spend too much time on the slides. You've seen this slide already, so many times already, so it's all about raising those SharePoint functionalities and Office 365 functionalities in multiple different devices. It's not anymore just the browser within your computer, it's all about other devices and also showing the stuff within the Office applications. But let's not spend time on that. Let's concentrate on the actual session objectives on this particular session. So, right in this session, we're going to concentrate on understanding of a different provisioning options, their advantages and their disadvantages when we think about SharePoint usage in the on-prem or within the cloud. So this is not about just Office 365. The key point is that when do we use and what do we want to use? And during this intro, please, I would suggest you, let's say, be keeping your mind open. So within the following 75 minutes or 72 minutes, we're going to show some alternative ways of doing SharePoint provisioning and site provisioning. It doesn't mean that if you do full trust code, it would be a wrong way to do stuff. It's not the old school stuff. Completely supported, it's going to be supported in the future as well. We're just going to show an alternative way of creating sites and subsites and managing branding in a way that it actually works within the cloud and in the on-prem. You write once, and it actually works in every single deployment, which is pretty interesting. So keep your mind open. Don't just judge us immediately. And let's talk about after the session if you have any additional questions. So, let's get started with a small introduction. So what we want to do first, before we dive into the SharePoint apps, we want to make sure we understand the alternative options and what are those advantages and disadvantages in the alternative options, because we can still do functionalities like feature stapling. Feature stapling has been part of the SharePoint since 2007. We introduced the feature stapling in 2007, and the key objective of the feature stapling is that we modify how the out-of-the-box site definitions are provisioned. So we provision the out-of-the-box site definition, like theme site, and then we activate a custom feature in. The challenge of the feature stapling is that we really can't actually introduce new options to be available within the create site functionality. The feature stapling is there to modify any of the existing templates. The second kind of a challenge within the feature stapling is that it's only available within the cloud on the site collection level. So you cannot use feature stapling, as an example, to modify your MySite provisioning. That's not a capability which we have in the Office 365, which is a pretty common scenario for on-premises, right? Today we're going to show then the alternative means, for example, for the MySite, or sorry, not MySite, not SkyDrive, the OneDrive Pro for business branding handling. The second dimension and an old-school way of doing customizations is the site definition processing, the site definitions. This is a model which has been part of the SharePoint since the early dawn of SharePoint, actually already in 2003 or even earlier than that. The key objective of the site definition is that we're able to bring new templates to be available within the create site functionality. So whenever the user goes to the create subsite, we're able to actually introduce new templates to be available. The site definition, however, has massive challenges, so it impacts the major version upgrades of your SharePoint. So whenever you move to a following version of the SharePoint, if you have created sites using custom site definitions, you need to worry about upgrading them. It's not going to be taken care of by the SharePoint natively. And this might be a really nasty change. The second dimension is that we cannot support site definitions within Office 365. So what if you have created some custom sites using a site definitions in the on-prem and you want to migrate them to the cloud? Well, you can't. It's impossible. We don't actually support those custom site definitions within the on-prem. And the fact that these site definitions are deployed in a farm level. So it's the fact that they are not actually then supported in Office 365. It's a technology which could be considered kind of a, well, it's not deprecated, but it's not definitely the best option from a long-term versioning perspective. Personally, I've done like Kachillion custom site definitions, and all of those are now considered, let's say, not good way of doing. So I understand that the message might seem, let's say, harsh. What we have done in 2007, what we have done in 2010, that was then. Today, we start moving to a new direction, and we have better tooling available. The alternative for the site definition, which we introduced in 2010, was the web template. Web template is essentially based on the similar concepts as the site definitions, but we can introduce them more freely. We are able to introduce them in a site collection level or in a farm level. And since we can introduce them in a site collection level, they are actually supported within the Office 365 as well. It's a pretty powerful technique. And we're using essentially the same ONNET XML technology like we do with the site definitions. We're not going to actually deep dive on the ONNET XMLs or the feature elements today because this is a 400-level session. We assume that you guys understand what's an ONNET XML. So I'm not going to actually go through that structure today. The challenge of the web template is, however, especially in Office 365, that whenever we create sites based on web templates, none of the stapled features are activated. So whenever we create a site using a web template, which is based on, let's say, out-of-the-box theme site, the site is created. If it would have been out-of-the-box theme site, the stapled features would be activated. When it's a web template, they are not activated. So we need to take that into consideration within our ONNET XML file, which means that we need to figure out what are those features, the stapled features, and make sure that they are activated as well. The key challenge, however, in the Office 365 is the ongoing new releases and versioning within the Office 365. So we will actually introduce new capabilities to out-of-the-box site definitions like the theme sites using feature stapling. So let's say that right now, today, we are releasing a new capability on the out-of-the-box theme site by using the feature stapling in the Microsoft perspective. It means that any of your old web templates, they don't have that stapled feature in. And you need to go then afterwards and do the maintenance for your code to keep up with all of these changes. Which is essentially, it means that with the web template is not really a optimal thing to be used within the Office 365 either. Then the fourth kind of a more classical way of doing stuff is the full server-side custom controls, the full server-side things, which is essentially where we build, for example, a web parts or application pages in the layouts folder, and then we do a timer jobs and all of that. These always require deployment of a full trust code, so essentially they're not available within the Office 365. So we need to start thinking in alternative ways of enabling the same capabilities for the end users, what these old, well, not old, but these classic approaches were able to do. And that's where we go to the SharePoint apps. We start thinking that how can we actually utilize the new capabilities, the new technical platform, to keep us, to bring us the possibilities. The one of the points what we really want to also say is that the SharePoint app is not just a pattern for Office 365. What we want to do, actually, is that we want to, at least personally, I want to write my stuff once. And I want to consider, I want to be able to use that code within the cloud and in the on-prem. I don't want to consider the cloud as an exception or the on-prem as an exception. I want to make sure that my customers and my deployments can be migrated to the cloud or back from the cloud to the on-prem. So if I implement my stuff using the SharePoint apps, I actually have this capability. So I'm able to move across the environment so the customizations don't lock me or they don't lock me to that particular deployment. So what do we actually do and what do we mean with that? We introduced this new term called remote provisioning process or remote provisioning. And what it means is to oversimplify things. It means that when an end user goes to the new subsite functionality or a new site collection functionality, the thing what we show for the end user is not actually what SharePoint is offering. It's coming from the provider-hosted application. If it's an on-premises, it's a provider-hosted application platform which is running in the Windows Server, ASP.NET. If it's in the Office 365, it could be a Windows Azure. There's multiple different approaches. What we do then is that we're able to introduce this abstraction of templates. So like in this case, we have a Contoso team, Super team, and a project site. All of them could be a team site with the small modifications, like branding or some sites or content types which we add in automatically. So we're able to actually control this provisioning using this provider-hosted app, and then we're able to use client-side object model to actually create that site back on the SharePoint side. So the whole logic is actually running outside of the SharePoint. Completely valid approach and pretty easily doable, and we're going to share some code today as well within our examples. And obviously, then you get a SharePoint sites and you get all of that stuff what you're actually executing within the provider-hosted application. Why do we want to do this? Why do we actually want to do this in reality? Is that we want to avoid we want to fix the message what we're hearing all the time from our customers. Why on earth I need to invest hundreds of thousands of every single major version upgrade with my SharePoint? I've just invested, let's say, 500,000 to the customizations when we went to the SharePoint 2010. Now you release the new version with SharePoint 2013. And I need to, again, fix the customizations because the old customizations don't really work with the SharePoint. So what we want to do is that we're running the code outside of the SharePoint. And therefore, the SharePoint itself can be actually upgraded much more easily and much more cost efficiently because the customizations are actually not blocking the latest version. So we can get our hands and the end users can get their hands on the new capabilities natively within the SharePoint, and our customizations are not blocking access on that new UI. And I know, trust me, being there, I'm an old full trust code developer, it sounds really terrifying. We're introducing a completely new model which we're trying to justify for our developers. But the reality is, And the denial is definitely the first step. I still remember when I saw the idea of a SharePoint app by myself. I was like, no, never going to happen. Not going to do that. Then at some point, it clicked. And then it was like, oh, this is actually really cool stuff. I can do a lot more when I start running my stuff outside of the SharePoint. I'm not limited on a SharePoint, and I can update and maintain my code without causing any downtime for the end users, which is pretty significant. It's the same thing when you think of it. If you come from 2007 or 2010, somebody, the first time you go to the SharePoint, somebody told you that you need to learn to understand feature framework and solution packages. That was a pretty significant for a developer. That took quite a long time to actually get your hands on Element XMLs, especially in 2007 when we didn't have any documentation. And we didn't have any Visual Studio tooling when the SharePoint 2007 went live. So that was a pretty significant headache. I still remember that by myself. If you're a new age SharePoint developer, you're really lucky because the Visual Studio tooling has been evolved so much from those days. The second kind of the recollection what I have is somebody told me that I need to understand the CAML. As an example, the schema XML of a list definition. They are insane. 5,000 lines of XML, and I need to maintain that. Wow. Using the remote provisioning, I don't need to worry about that. I can set that XML pane to a side, and I can write such C-sharp code within the Windows Observer or within my own premises, which is pretty cool. And I'm using the web, normal web development tooling to control how the SharePoint actually works. And I trust me, it takes a while to approve the change and learn the stuff. I know that. I'm being on the same route. But it's worthwhile to actually investigate and start adapting slowly. It doesn't mean it one night. It's not a switch on one night. It's not a switch within the one major version of SharePoint. But you slowly start going and learning the new capabilities. And we have a lot of examples ready for you to download and start testing. But this is, we could say, this is a pretty controversial slide as well, the following one, if my clicker will work. We could say that this is actually one of the biggest changes within a SharePoint history. And we need to figure out what do we want to do. Because Microsoft, I'm a Microsoft consultant, but I don't have any controls. I can fight back and say, I want to do a full trust code. And I can keep on doing full trust code, that's fine. But we as a Microsoft, we are highly committed on the cloud. So we want to make sure that the cloud has the same customization capabilities. And why not actually write it once so it works in a way in the on-prem and in the cloud as well? Because the app world is actually giving that to us, which is pretty cool. How do we actually make this work in the real life? So let's go to the demos. Trust me, there's a lot of code coming up. It's not just the fancy slides. So let's actually have a look on the how do we make it happen in the Office 365.
Thank you, Vesa. So ready for some demos? Yes. Now, a little bit of introduction before the demo, just to set the scene. I do think that you all already pretty familiar with the SharePoint apps, provider-hosted apps, so, but a quick intro to the concept. A provider-hosted app runs, as mentioned, outside of SharePoint. You need to have a provider, someone that will host your app, right? So that's the right side over here. That can be actually anything. In our sample, we will use Windows Azure Cloud Services, but you could use a local IIS on-premises, or you can use maybe Apache. Actually, we don't care. You need to run it somewhere, and Azure is a nice platform to do it. That provider-hosted app running at the provider side, that part, there you will use, for example, C# and CSOM, to go back to SharePoint. So very important that app calls back into SharePoint to do things, either in the app web or the host web. So that's kind of the blueprint. SharePoint with the data, and the right side, the provider-hosted app. If you now move on and translate this model in our demo, then the provider part will be Windows Azure, meaning the demo will run on Windows Azure. And for the SharePoint part, for this part of the demo, it's running on SharePoint Online 365, our future platform the future of SharePoint. So what you will see in the demo is, first of all, a site directory. How many of you today have some kind of a site directory capability in your platform? Yeah, I see that more. One third of the room already raises hands, so pretty common thing to have. So we will again start from a site directory for you. If my clicker works right. Then the user, he needs to have an option to create a new site collection. So you want to ask some information, title, owner, kind of information that you collect. That one is running on Windows Azure. When you see that screen later on, think about this is running outside of SharePoint, it's running on Windows Azure. Site collection provisioning is a process that takes time. If you're on premises today, you might see times around, it's pretty acceptable on premises, 30 seconds, maybe less. If you're online, SharePoint Online, my experience is that it takes, best case, 5 minutes. Can take longer, 10 minutes, 15 minutes, depending on the load on the environment, which is fine if you make this an asynchronous process. You don't want to have your user wait, watching the wheel turning or the I'm working on it thingy for 15 minutes. Don't do that. Just push it to a background process. And in our case, we're going to use Azure again to realize that. Azure is a concept of web roles and worker roles as part of Azure Cloud Services, where the web role will be the interactive part, hosting your web pages. The worker role will be kind of a processing engine, a batch engine. You can see it like that. And then finally, that worker role will create a site collection, step one. And step two, it will start doing magic. It will take the standard site, team site, and will rebuild it to something that you need, that you can use. Right, so let's dive into a demo. Can you switch to the three? Thank you. Good. What you see here is the site directory. So it's actually a site collection, which is my site directory environment. Pretty simple one. Small list with some fields. And what I can do, I'm going to create a new site collection. Now remember, we had an app for doing that. So an app is installed over here. If you go to site contents, I can see my app if it loads. Here it is. Contoso reference solution. Let's click on it. And you get the default view on how to use an app.
And just to reinforce the message, all of these demos are available from the officeams.codeplex.com. We're going to show the URLs after the session as well.
Absolutely. Just to prove you, you see this URL over here? Prof.set1 and so on. This is running outside of SharePoint Online. It's actually running on Azure on my host with my domain name, with my certificates, so you can all tailor that and make that like you want to have it. Now, from a usability perspective, I don't really like this. This kind of a, I'm outside of SharePoint. Totally, this feels a bit like disconnected for me. This full page experience, it works, and you have some branding in there, which we kind of take over from SharePoint via the Chrome control, but there must be a nicer way to show this kind of screen. So I'm going to go back to the site directory site. I will use the new site here. This actually is a little bit of HTML and JavaScript in a script editor web part, very simple. And what this realizes is the same app in a dialog. How cool is that? This is just SharePoint. You see? My users, they don't even think I'm outside of SharePoint anymore. This is what they need. So let's make a site collection. Demo, SPC, I'm not really good in creative names. A template, and remember, you have templates today, team size, project size, whatever type, but you can make your own. So here we will make our own collaboration template with our specific customer requirements implemented. We give it an owner. Let's add a new one. So here we go. And finally, a data classification. Data classification is here for demo purposes. You will understand later on why. But the idea is that you want to create some sites online and maybe some sites elsewhere. So let's leave this now on LBA and hit create. What now will happen is that this screen, this application, this SharePoint app running on Windows Azure will put a message in an Azure queue. And the worker role at Azure will kind of listen to the queue, pick out the message, and will start processing it, will start doing something with it. From a user perspective, this is a nice thing because he can continue working. He gets feedback like, I've requested something, it's provisioning, he gets a mail, etc. So pretty nice. Now, while this is provisioning, it takes 5 minutes or more. I'm not going to wait that long. I will show you how to do this. So as Wes already mentioned, this is a web samples that you can use, that you can take along, that you can use for your customers, for your projects. And they're fully available already on Office AMS. So don't worry, all of this you can just get. There's some code, there's also documentation. We have a document in there that describes all the different projects that you see here. I'm not gonna explain each and every project because that will lead us too far and not something that you would want to have in this session, I think. So I will focus on the main parts, the most important parts with regard to site provisioning. And those parts are actually, let me escape here, I will start from the worker role. Remember, forum, message in the queue, Azure worker role needs to do something. That's why I start with the code on the Azure worker role side. So I'm not going to show anything of the screens, etc. That worker role has a loop, a while loop, where it kind of starts listening, listening, listening. Oh, there is a message. I need to do something. And that something is kind of encapsulated in this one, process message. So let's look at that one. And let me make it a little bit bigger for you guys, like this. So remember we talked about data classification, LBI, MBI, HBI, kind of a way to classify data, but it was not important or security-wise important. So we're now going to do the flow where we picked LBI or MBI, like regular data, let's put it like this. And what we will do is we create a class of a certain type. So your site template from the past, or your web template from the past, actually now is a class. It's a plain C# class in this case that will be your template. I have two of them in here, but you can easily make more. And you might think, yeah, but deploying new code for a new change, isn't that a big deal? Actually, things are easier now. Since you have a provider-hosted app, your code is running outside of SharePoint. Deploying a new version is just publishing it in Azure, Visual Studio, which pushes the message and the code, everything back to Azure, and you're done. Your SharePoint environment isn't affected when you upgrade this one, not at all. This is just copying the binaries, actually. It's so simple. So for me, adding a new template, you do the change, and you deploy again. Pretty simple. Now let's take a look in this Contoso collaboration class. because that's kind of the main thing that you want to see. Of course, we start with fetching some configuration data, nothing spectacular over there, so let's move on. What you want to see probably is this one, to start with. We need to, first of all, create a site collection, otherwise we cannot do anything. Important here is when you create a site collection, use the default template. Use standard templates. Ideally, just use a standard team site template, because actually we ship you with a project site template, but that's nothing more than a team site template with some features activated. So use standard team site template as base for your future sites. So that's what we do here. We plug in the team site templates and some other information. And then we create the site collection. You might have already seen this type of code to create site collections. We announced Monday during the dev keynote that we have an API to remotely create site collections. And that's what's being used over here. It's about filling kind of a class holding information for your site collection, and then use a create site on the tenant object to realize it.
And to be honest, quick comment on that one, the site creation properties have been actually available in the PowerShell, Microsoft Online PowerShell package, but it hasn't been separately released as a redistributable package. So that's essentially the change what we did on Monday. Yep. So now it's a own DLL which can be redistributed by yourself within your deployments. Just to kind of clarify that. So.
Right. Thank you, Vesa. Absolutely. So again, pretty simple. You might want to add this one if you build yourself. It's kind of a loop that will wait. It will go back and check, site collection ready? No. Okay, let's wait. Check again until it's ready. Because your next part of the code depends on it. If you want to modify the site collection, it needs to be ready first. This helps you with that. So let's move back to Contoso collaboration. You have your plain, simple team site collection. What do you want to do then? What do you typically do in a site template, web template? What do you think? Features, yes. So adding features, enabling features, site scoped, web scoped, one line of code. So it's, for me, this is easier than writing the XML part, to be honest. I more like this part, but
That's your opinion.
I'm not the old school developer guy.
So, just teasing.
So everyone has his view on that one. But actually, it's once you have the base layers ready, it's same thing actually than doing XML. Pretty simple. And this library with all those elements, the CSOM service over here, you get it. It's already available for you guys. So you can just use the same library and start doing this for your customers. So we enable features. What else would be nice? Additional libraries, maybe a custom document library, a list, you name it. You can easily make it. So in the demo, we are creating actually a picture library and one kind of obscure library, the library GUID. Now, this is actually a promoted links list for which there is no type in the CSOM enum. So you have to specify the feature ID and the list ID, and then you can do the same thing. What else can we do? List versioning. My customer wants to have versioning enabled by default. Is there a way to save some money on backup restore requirements, etc.? So easily done. Then a big one. Who has ever created a site template without a customized homepage? Probably no one. So you always want to kind of make the landing page look nice, put your stuff on it, right? And that's what we can do over here. We've chosen to clean the landing page, meaning we just get all stuff out of home.aspx, and then we start rebuilding it. So first we delete web parts. Again, one line of code where you refer to the page and the web part that you want to remove. So first get it clean, then add new stuff. You want to maybe add new web parts. So in the demo, we will add a new web part for the promoted list, promoted links list. I always do this wrong. For the promoted links list that we added, we'll put that one on the homepage. So you can use the same technique to also add app parts.
What was the question?
Yeah, repeat the question. Thank you, Vesa. What about app parts? The same approach can be used to also add app parts on a page. So to add, you create a construct the XML web part. You guys do know web part XML. So you build the web part XML, and then you add the web part to the wiki page. So a theme site is wiki pages. Wiki page has a certain layout, number of rows, columns you can choose. And in this case, we're going to add the web part to the home page. Oops, here. On row 2, column 2. Again, easy. And we can continue like that. We can do the same concept to add pages. You might want to introduce additional pages in your template. So add HTML to, I was a little bit too fast. This is about adding HTML content on your page. You want to put a block of HTML on a page, on the homepage, a kind of a nice welcome message. Same model, add HTML to wiki page, where you plug in the HTML and you pick the location.
Bert, I need to do the question because I think half of the audience is thinking, that's quite a lot of code still. Isn't it, if you're used to doing XML, isn't this kind of quite a lot of stuff which you need to do as well?
If you need to start fully from scratch with nothing, it might be need a little bit of code. But we have a really nice reference solution, reference model, where you can start from. You can take, there's a separate project in that class. You just take the project, change the namespaces. We all name Contoso at Microsoft. But you can change it, and it's yours. And then it's pretty simple, Vesa. I'm not going to explain each and every line, but you see that we add additional pages, web parts on pages. You get the feel about it. If you move on, another typical task is navigation. I want to have a custom node in my quick launch navigation. I want to throw out some of those quick launch nodes. Perfectly possible again. Actually, we kind of have a brute force method here. We just say all quick launches nodes, throw them out, gone, and we add again what we need. Maybe a little interesting thing over here, when we add a new navigation element, you can use resource files. So you might be familiar with them when you create on-premises full trust SharePoint solutions. Those same resource files you can also use in online with CSUM. Unfortunately, you cannot really add new resource files, but that might be changing, let's hope. And this just keeps on continuing. Let's focus also on this one here. A site template will bring you elements, new stuff, new pages, web parts, etc. But also branding. You want to have a custom look and feel. So same thing, again, a few lines of code to push, in this case, a custom theme into your site. And Vesa will kind of go a bit deeper in that topic in his demo. But then we're almost there. So we did some steps, features, list libraries, pages, navigation, anything you can imagine. You can make this conditional depending on the data that you have. You're really free and flexible to do what you want here.
And there's obviously a lot of opinions that this more code or more stuff what you need to do compared to the XMLs. But then on the XML side, you need to actually understand the XMLs as well. You need to design the feature framework elements. You need to design the elements, the references, and site definitions. For many of the developers who are coming as a new resources to the SharePoint, I'd say that learning provisioning stuff using code is more natural for them.
Yeah.
Because the feature XMLs are really scary if you don't know what they actually do, right? So it definitely looks that there's a lot of code, but at the same time, you have a full power what you're actually doing, using those remote calls and operating against then the SharePoint.
Yes, so it's way easier for regular developers. And meanwhile, our 5 minutes passed by. The site is available. So let's have a look at the outcome very quickly, and then we move on to the next demo. What do you think? Does it look customized? So Vesa made a nice team. So he is to thank for the look and feel, for the branding. But you see the custom HTML. You see our promoted links list over here. Updated navigation, etc. So you get the point. Now let's kind of move to the next level.
Yes. So let's continue with slightly more detailed stuff and slightly more deeper on what we can do using the remote provisioning patterns. So what we can do when we combine the on-prem and the cloud, which is pretty common, right? Many of our big customers are looking into creating some of the stuff within the cloud, but then some of the stuff in the on-prem. And so we need to understand how do we do the same stuff from a one location to both directions. The first thing what we need to understand is that right now, today, within the on-prem, we have a small limitation. This is going to be addressed. But right now in today, we're able to do the provider-hosted apps. But to be able to create a site collection remotely, you need to create a small extension to your SharePoint, which is kind of silly, isn't it? So I'm trying to go to the SharePoint apps, but then you need to enable this site collection creation remotely in the on-prem by deploying a full chest code. So it's not really an awesome story, but that's been addressed. So that there's going to be a new APIs available pretty fast for on-premises as well to enable the remote creation of site collections. This is a current day, right now, today, this is still the limitation. But what we do in the on-prem, we essentially run the provider-hosted application again somewhere. Then we call this custom WCF service to create the site collection. And after that, we then call the same CSAM, the REST remote APIs to get the branding, to get the customizations, to get the additional lists and whatever stuff in the on-prem. And the reason why we want to do this in this way is that whenever we get that API available within the on-prem, which is pretty soon, unfortunately, I cannot announce that today, but it's pretty soon, we can replace that step number two by using native out-of-the-box client-side object model, which is pretty cool. So that's going to happen pretty soon within the on-prem as well. So the on-prem relates on the hybrid self-service site collection creation. So this is a pretty common request from our enterprise customers. And the classic way how do we do a hybrid self-service pattern is that we have the SharePoint, we have a SharePoint farm in on-prem, we have a Office 365. We have something in the on-prem, like the provider-hosted application, which is providing then the UI, where you actually fill up what kind of site collection you want to create. And then based on the selection of an end user, is it a high classified data, is it a low classified data, like in Bert's example, we either create the site in on-prem, or then we call stuff against the cloud. So we control the creation based on the metadata, what do we actually request from the end user. So this is actually the reason why we call this classic approach, is that many of our customers are then saying, well, that's fine that I need to have the on-premises SharePoint farm for my site collections, but now you're saying that I need to have this provider-hosted app also that the provider-hosted environment running there as well in the on-prem, so I'm able to do the creation of the hybrid site collection. But the reality is that you don't actually need to do so. What we want to do and what many of our customers want to do, they want to first go to the cloud nowadays. So by default, create stuff in the cloud. By second, as an exception, create high classified information in the on-prem. And what we're actually sharing within our examples as well is the complete hybrid pattern in a way that we have the provider-hosted application running within the Windows Azure. From the Windows Azure, we then provision, based on, again, the metadata selections of an end user, We create those site collections by default first to the cloud, but then for the on-prem, we use a service bus tunnel to create site collections in the on-prem farm. So the controlling piece and the business logic and the application is actually running then in the Windows Azure. Your on-prem footprint is pretty simple. It's just a SharePoint, and well, you have to have that service bus tunnel fellow, which is actually taking those requests in. But the actual logic and the code which is running and operating is actually within the Windows Azure. And this is actually really interesting. Many of our enterprise customers are looking into this one because now you're able to use the Windows Azure PaaS services, the platform as a service services, as your driven engine to operate against on-prem and within the cloud.
Yeah, and to add to that, Vesa, it's not only for provisioning. This technique can be used to have any app running in Azure or outside to get to data on-premises. So if you want to service some on-premises business data in your app and you're in SharePoint Online, this gives you a pretty easy way to realize that without going into the reverse proxy, publishing stuff, and all the complex things and expensive things. This is really simple and powerful.
Excellent point. So the service bus tunnel, what we have on the picture as the bullet point number two, it doesn't require any reverse proxies. It doesn't require UATs. It doesn't require anything like that. But you can use that engine as your way from accessing on-premises LOB system from the cloud. In our case, what we're going to do in the demo as well is that we can actually kind of provision site collections to the on-prem using this service bus tunnel. But you can do other stuff as well. So it's an extremely powerful technology to access from the cloud your on-prem without requirements of any additional investments on the reverse proxies or anything like
Absolutely.
That.
Absolutely.
So let's actually go to the demo and perhaps kind of show the hybrid model of creation site collections in the on-prem as well.
Yes. Can we switch to
Yes.
Alrighty. So, we want to create a site collection in on-premises, so we should move to on-premises. Huh? So, I happen to have a lab server running in my basement in Belgium, and that one I'm logged into now via RDP.
Which is, by the way, pretty cool. We are in Las Vegas, and now you have a network connectivity to your home
Absolutely.
Where you have a SharePoint running.
So, as long as my wife doesn't shut up off the server, I'm fine.
But we have this recorded as well as a video.
We did
so
record, indeed, absolutely.
Crossing the fingers.
So, actually, for the demo, I just copied the same solution, the exact same solution to my SharePoint box. It's running over here. And I'm going to highlight the code that's relevant for this kind of on-premises provisioning scenario. In the solution, there is, let me zoom. Zooming in RDP, it works. There is a ref.provisioning.hybrid.console application. This console application is there to show you kind of where the message from Azure Service Bus will land. In reality, you might want to build this as kind of a Windows service, so it runs in background. But for demo purposes, it's a console application, so you see something happening, right?
So that's the fellow in on-prem, which is waiting for the messages coming from the cloud.
Yeah, so this fellow will connect to Azure Service Bus. So the code here is nothing more, and let's move to a full screen experience. It's actually nothing more than connecting with Azure Service Bus. It's getting some information from Azure Service Bus, namespace, owner, a secret key. Once you have that, you can use it to kind of create a service host of a certain type. So SharePoint provisioning is actually kind of the service that we will expose via Azure Service Bus. And once we have all of this set up, the code will just open the host and will start waiting for messages. So all I think is about 20 lines of code to make the connection. So this one side, this is the on-premises component going to Service Bus, connecting. We also need the other side, the SharePoint app doing the same thing, right?
So just a quick comment on that. The reason why it doesn't require any reverse proxies or anything like that is because this is the fellow which is opening up the connection or pipe to the cloud. And then there's no, it's a two-dimensional connection. And so it's running in on-prem, opens the connection to the cloud, and it waits whenever there's a message coming in from the cloud. Oh, got it, and then it starts working.
Yep.
So you don't need to have a reverse proxy. You don't need to have anything like that within your on-prem, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's two sides connecting to the same point, and then Service Bus will be the broker of the messages. The code at the other side, at the provisioning side, is kind of the same thing, actually. You make the connection with the same namespace and secret and name, and then you make a call into your service. So we call the provision side collection method of our SharePoint provisioning service. When the code does this, it sends a message to Service Bus, and the other side will pick it up. And we will show this in real time. So what I'm going to do, going back to on-premises, and I'm going to launch the console application. Let me check that I have my breakpoints put at the correct location. Yes.
So we're going to go in the Las Vegas, connect to the cloud, and then we're going to create a site collection to the Belgium.
Yep.
Unless your wife goes and unblocks
the
machine.
Yeah. So. But let's hope that doesn't happen. So let me...
It's actually midnight in Belgium.
Yeah.
Pretty close.
Crazy wife. Here you see the console application listening to the service endpoint. Right? So this is running, this is waiting, this is on-premises. I will now go to my provisioning, my site directory, one site directory for cloud and on-premises. I'm going to create a new site. New site. Come on. All right. On-prem site. We all leave the defaults here. Coloration site for Kevin. In this case, I'm going to pick HBI. Remember, HBI was the one that triggered, like, this is a secure site. I do need it on-premises. Might be a legal reason, whatever that your customer thinks about it. But
it's pretty common, at least in Europe, that the customers are saying that, yeah, we have this secure information which we need to secure. And they're kind of afraid about this, putting that to the cloud. So they want to still keep it in on-prem. But it's based on the classification, data secret classification. So when you select that metadata, the end user doesn't need to understand where the site is, as long as we get the URL and access for the end user. So we kind of make the decision based on the security policies, what have been established. Yeah. Where do we actually create them?
Yeah. In hybrid scenarios, end users actually don't care about the technical part. They just want to go to one place, create a site, and use it. They don't care whether it's on-prem or online. So I'm going to hit create. And what will happen is we send the message to Azure via the queue. The Azure worker role picks it up. And it sees, oh, this is something for on-premises. Instead of doing the actual job itself, it will push a message via Service Bus on-premises. That's what's going to happen. So I click create. And again, the screen returns pretty fast. Back to my, right. So I've requested an on-premises site collection. And if everything went well, we should hit a breakpoint in on-premises. Remember, we put a breakpoint. So I'm over here. And ta-da. I'm in on-premises. So in online, I created a site, requested a site collection creation, and my breakpoint in my lab server at home hits nice. What do you think? So another point here, the exact same code that we used to make that online site is used over here. You see, exactly the same piece of code.
Except the actual site collection creation.
Yeah, I will come to that, but you see the same feature stuff, list stuff, etc. Same thing. I'm going to hit F5 here. So I'll leave it running. F5. So that's running. But I want to come back to what Vesa mentioned, the actual provisioning part. So to create a site collection on premises, we don't use the newly announced API yet.
Well, technically, like Rob said on Monday, Rob actually said on Monday's session, I don't know if you saw the keynote for the developers, that you can use the same API for on-prem and within the cloud, which is true, technically. It just requires that in the on-prem, you're running in multi-tenant mode. And it's not like that many customers are actually doing that. So we're going to still wait for the real solution for the on-prem. But technically, he was correct.
Yeah. So. But in reality, we don't want to do that. So what we do actually is we have a WCF service, full trust code that we deploy on premises on the SharePoint box. That's the only part in this whole story, that little WCF service that creates a site collection, is the only little piece of full trust code that needs to run on a SharePoint box. All the other parts can run anywhere where you want. You choose. But that little part needs to run on a SharePoint box. Quick.
The question was that what's the timeline for the real solution within the on-prem? It is pretty fast. I can't unfortunately comment, but we're looking into getting that resolved in a pretty fast time frame. fast, but not search fast, but you know.
Right.
We have some CUs coming up, but we can't comment on the time frame. So we will use the normal updating scenarios to introduce additional capabilities. So it's going to be part of one of the CUs which are coming up.
Okay, so to conclude the demo, just to show you that it really, really did something. You see that the status for my on-premises site, it switched to available. And I can open up the site. Now I actually published my on-premises environment via reverse proxy to the outside world, so that's why I'm just opening it inside here in the browser. But you get the same site, and actually this is really a different URL. This is on-premises. This is not SharePoint.com as URL. This is my local lab running in Belgium. Same site, looks the same, behaves the same, but just on-premises.
Pretty cool stuff.
Pretty cool stuff. Now, Vesa, move it again to the next level.
Yes, so we have one thing that we promised to do still, which is essentially using the same site provisioning techniques to handle the personal sites, or SkyDrive, or the OneDrive for business sites. And that's a pretty common scenario as well. So what Bert has been showing is provisioning of theme sites. You can provision publishing sites as well using the same pattern. Technically, there's no difference. The reason, by the way, why we demonstrate all of our provisioning and branding done by themes is just that we want to promote themes. You can do custom master pages as well using this same pattern. We just want to make sure that the theme is actually, in the longer run, it's better bet if you don't need to do a massive customizations within your UI. But you can do that as well, your choice. The one thing what the many of our enterprise customers want, however, is the OneDrive for business branding. They want to make sure that the OneDrive for business is actually following up on the branding of the company as well. The OneDrive for business, we can actually solve this branding requirement pretty easily, but it's a slightly different scenario. Due to the fact that the OneDrive for business sites are created when the end user goes there first time. So they're dynamically created within the cloud. Especially within the cloud where we cannot use feature stapling to customize taking care of the branding. So whenever the end user actually goes first time to the SkyDrive Pro site, then the My Personal Site Collections creation starts. How do we actually fix this? I'm going to show the demo as well. But essentially what we need to do is that we need to funnel all of the users to a single entry. It could be the intranet front page. It could be the public side of the OneDrive Pro for business site, where we have the news feeds or some other things. Just as well, it could be the intranet, because quite often, within the companies, the default URL, whenever they open the browser, is pointing to the front page of the intranet. What do we need to do is to have a small app part, provide a hosted application. Technically, it could be a SharePoint hosted app as well, which is accessing dynamically particular users my site, using, for example, the provider-hosted pattern. So what we have in the demo as well is an app part which is running outside of the SharePoint in a properly hosted environment, which is then has its own assets and XML-based configuration. Well, in this case, it's actually hard-coded, where it then calls back on my personal, my site, and makes sure that the right branding is applied. But the reason why this has to be done slightly different, as mentioned, is that whenever the end user first time go to the SkyDrive, OneDrive for Business sign, the site collection gets created. So it's a slightly different approach. The code, I'll show this one in demo, so it's more clarifying.
Yeah.
So let's have a look on that. So let's actually have a look on how do we make it happen in the Office 365 with a real example. There we go. So this is me in the Office 365 within my Office 365 site. And we are currently running within the public side of the OneDrive Pro business sites. You may or may not know, but I'll call them my sites, just for the clarity for myself. So the my sites consist from two sites. It's a one-site collection, which is the same for all, which is the public side of it, where we have the edit user edit profile. If you're not using the Yammer, it has the news feed and all of that functionality. Then the actual personal SkyDrive, OneDrive for Business sign is the one which is dedicated and created for a particular user. And that's dynamically created to individual user. We have announced this week a way to pre-create them for all of your employees beforehand, which is one option. We have an API to do that right now. But the challenge is that what if you actually recruit additional people into your company? You probably don't want to have that pre-creation as part of the onboarding process. You want to think about an alternative way of handling the branding. So in my case, we are already running the SharePoint conference theme within the public site. And when I go to my SkyDrive OneDrive business site, I can't get it right, it has actually the custom branding applied. Because for me, that widget has been already executed. So this is what we want to do. Right, we want to have the same branding in all of the sites of the OneDrive Pro. Let's have a look on the challenge. So what's actually the problem? So here's my my two-year boy, who has obviously a SharePoint SkyDrive Pro site as well, which he's really actively using. So essentially, it's when he's accessing the site, he will see within the same address, he will see his information in the public side of the OneDrive Pro business. Whenever he then goes to his own private OneDrive Pro site, we actually see the challenge if we haven't applied the branding to dynamically to his profile or to his SkyDrive OneDrive for Business site. So essentially now when when my boy is moving between the newsfeed, which happens quite often, between the newsfeed and the OneDrive Pro site, we see a branding change. So it's pretty evident that our customers are saying, we need to get it solved. It's not acceptable that when I move between the sites, the branding, even though the default Office theme is pretty crisp, but they want to have their custom branding applied. The same is available when you go to the sites. You're able to see that, again, I'm switched on the blue themes. How do we make it happen? Well, as mentioned, we need to funnel all of our employees to one route, which is quite commonly the intranet front page. Because in our crew policy for my son, I configured that whenever he will open up the browser, he will access our intranet front page to see all the latest news from mom, so he's keeping up with what's happening with the family. So essentially, when he goes and opens up the browser, by default, we will open up the intranet front page, which then actually has the widget. The widget, which right now is visible for a purpose, so it's working on it. We could actually hide it. That particular fellow is an app part, which has a wide and height, and that's why it's actually visible. It's showing that working on it message right now. We could put the height to zero and the wide to zero, but it would be still executing on the front page of the intranet. And what is it actually doing? Well, it is dynamically checking, it's Joona. Oh, you have a OneDrive Pro business site. Is the custom branding already applied? Oh, it haven't. Let's actually deploy the master pages or themes or whatever assets or configurations to the SkyDrive because we haven't modified that yet. So it's dynamically checking that. Now if I'm refreshing the page, it is again checking, is the latest version of the branding already applied? Oh, it is. So therefore, I'm not going to do the thing. So now when I went through to this front page of the intranet, and if I go back to the OneDrive Pro site, we're able to see dynamically the branding to applied and changed, which is pretty cool,
cool,
isn't it? The one thing what I wanted to also show in here, which you probably didn't notice in my profile, we're not just applying branding with a theme. What we also do is we get inject some additional messages. So we inject, for example, a message which is saying, the OneDrive for Business should not be used for storing high confidential files. So it's not just for branding. We can do a lot of other stuff using the same pattern as well. So we're able to inject guidance, documents, content types, and so on. And how do we actually make it happen? You probably want to see the code, right? So actually, let's go to the Visual Studio, and I'll briefly walk it through so you get how it's, how simple this is, how simple the whole process is. So within my site, I'm actually going to show that quickly. So let's go, I'm going to use my own profile. Within the site, I'll go to the front page of the intranet just to explain what it is. We had that working on at Fellow, and as mentioned, right now it's visible. We could actually hide it pretty easily, just like putting the iframe height and size to a 1.0 pixel. So this one is actually coming from a Windows Azure. Vesco personalized site branding Azure websites. I haven't used a custom domain, so that's the reason why it says Azure websites. So it's an app part which is actually running on the front page of the intranet. And we can see that pretty easily if we take the page to an edit mode. So there's the app part, which is a personal site branding. I've just hidden essentially the title and all of that so that the end users don't see that. In the code, within the provider-hosted application, we access the particular user's user profile. So we do have a client-side APIs to access the user profile of a particular user, and we try to access the particular user's personal site. Pretty simple. If the personal site exists, it's essentially the OneDrive for Business site. We're able to modify that. If it doesn't exist, well, I'm just following up a good practice. I'm going to queue at the creation of that OneDrive for Business site, using that client-side object model for social. If it actually does already exist, I'm going to take an instance to the root web of the site collection. I'm loading that. Then I'm checking, is the latest version of the branding already applied? Essentially, I'm storing always the branding version to the property back of the site, so I don't need to reapply the branding all the time. If it's not there, pretty simple in this case, we actually use our reusable and downloadable code examples to deploy a new theme called SPC on the site, and then we are setting that theme using this reusable code set, which is a downloadable for you as well. The one additional thing what I'm doing is called JavaScript injection, so which is a really interesting way also to modify the sites. So what we are doing is that we are adding a JavaScript as a custom action to the site. I'm not going to walk through the code too detailed, but essentially what we do is that we use a functionality which we introduced already in SharePoint 2010 to be able to add script links to the site execution process. So whenever a page is loaded from the site, we actually include this JavaScript in.
And Vesa, with a JavaScript, you can do... you've shown a sample where you've shown a little green yellow bar on top. But you can do more, I think, with the JavaScript.
Yes. So JavaScript, now this way we can get the JavaScript executed on the page. And then it's up to us what the JavaScript is actually doing. So right now, we just simply use the status notification, get a message, OneDrive for Business should not be used for storing high confidential files. And then we essentially make it visible by running the SPUI status at status. So we're using the classic JavaScript APIs, what we have in the SharePoint. But this could be something much, much, much bigger. You can do additional things. You can call the web services. You can do whatever you want, with jQuery, whatever JavaScript engine what you want to use. And now, because we have this, every single time we execute this page, as part of the page or site execution, that JavaScript is also included. So if I open up the debugger, if I actually have a look on what kind of stuff is actually executed when the site is opened or when the page is rendered, our JavaScript is included in the page rendering process. And now that is then executing as part of the page rendering. and we're able to modify the elements and inject additional stuff as well, which is a pretty cool way of modifying the end-user experience. The reason why we do it in this way and not a custom master page is that now if there will be changes or maintenance done to out-of-the-box my site master, we will get them. It won't be, they won't override, our custom master page won't kind of block any changes what the Office 365 is doing, because we just inject those changes in using the JavaScript, which is pretty cool. So from an overall lifecycle perspective, you're able to then follow up on those changes within the Office 365. So it's a slightly better functionality. Thank you.
Thanks.
The one thing what I wanted to still talk, go back here, so that's the JavaScript link, and then I'm just simply storing the property. So this particular branding has applied. Let's store the branding version property to the property back, so that the next time when we're checking the site within the property host that app, it is checking, oh, it's already there. I'm not going to modify the site because everything has been already injected, and we're good to go. So when you think of it, yes, it's an alternative way to achieve the personal site branding, but it's like 20 lines of code, and fully downloadable for you, fully tested from the CodePlex site, which is awesome. So moving on, or closing up, because the time is flying when we're having fun, right? So key takeaways. The SharePoint app pattern can be used across the cloud and in on-prem. And at least for me as a developer, I'm still a developer by heart. I have a cool title, but luckily I can still write some code. For me, it's an awesome thing. I write once, and I can use that in on-prem and in the cloud. I don't consider cloud as an exception. I want to make sure that my stuff is fully usable regardless where the customer want to actually run the code or run the SharePoint. We don't want to, the SharePoint app patterns, they provide flexibility. We just need to think about alternative means to get to the same end result. It's not like you're able to just look element XML file and then figure out this is how I do that in the SharePoint app. The branding handling for SkyDrive Pro sites, the OneDrive for Business sites, is a good example. But the end-user perspective, it's the same end result. It's a custom branding. We just need to think about alternative ways of getting these things done. The third bullet point, stop using declarative options for site provisioning. I know that it might be a controversial statement. And definitely, I would say, start exploring the SharePoint app as your model to learn on those stuff and learn on those patterns. We have guidance, and the declarative options, the XML-based provisioning, it has certain, let's say, limitations, not only in the sense that is it cloud or in on-prem, but there are certain lifecycle challenges as well. But start learning the new stuff. This change doesn't happen one night. It doesn't happen even in one major version. The key point as a developer is to start investigating, checking, oh, can I actually achieve the same end result using the app model rather than the FTC? And if you feel more comfortable using full source code, just do the full source code. That's your choice. That's completely fine. But we want to promote the new capabilities within the on-prem and within the cloud using the SharePoint app patterns. And there's the URL one more time. Please go there. All of these code examples downloadable directly from the officeams.codeplex.com. And we are committed on sharing additional examples in the future as well. Thanks for your time.